horrible for you. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Portland City Council Chambers. How many of you have testified before? Raise your hand. Okay. How many of you have attended council chamber meetings? Raise your hand. All right. Well, for those of you that have not, there's no screaming or shouting or clapping. If you like something, you can do the jazz hands. If you don't like something, you're welcome to do this. If you see someone you know, you can wave at them. But we try to keep the forum an equal, a forum that is equally open and supportive of all points of view. If you want to sign in, if you want to speak, you need to sign in on one of the sign-in sheets out front, and we'll call people in the order that they signed up. We also, the last thing is, when you'll have 3 minutes to speak, and we only want your first and last name. If you're a lobbyist or if you represent an organization, not belong to it, but speak on its behalf, you're required to declare that as well. And we're just waiting for quorum. You all know Amanda Fritz. This is Kimberly Schneider. Oh, we haven't said hello to our fantastic council clerk. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning.
Good morning. How was your weekend?
Very good. I had a good weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
Do anything exciting? Go have a good meal anywhere?
I went wine tasting in Dundee.
Ooh,
on Sunday.
What was the best?
The friend I went with knew some the people at Argyle, so we had a really good, they were real entertaining there.
That's fancy. Yeah. Usually people say the third glass is the best glass. I think we can do the communications. Oops. City Council will come to order. It is Wednesday, September 29th. It's 9:30 a.m. Carla, can you please call the roll?
Altman, Leonard.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Fish, Adams.
Here. We have three time certains. And before we begin, I want to ask that, are we doing yours first? You think so? Well, why don't you both come on up? I'm extremely pleased and honored to be able to read the following proclamation. Whereas culture draws us together in common purpose, understanding, and celebration. And whereas Oregon's 1300 arts, heritage, and humanities nonprofits, museums, libraries, theaters, historical societies, art centers, and heritage sites are the heart of our communities. And whereas the Oregon Cultural Trust presents Oregon Days of Culture, October 1st through the 8th, during National Arts and Humanities Month to encourage Oregonians to celebrate, participate, and give to Oregon culture. And whereas October 8th, 2010 marks the 8th anniversary of Oregon's innovative cultural tax credit, encouraging the new and private investment in the Oregon culture, and whereas the Oregon Cultural Trust is a product of smart public policy and an example of what makes Oregon a proud thought leader nationwide, and whereas supporting cultural nonprofits and the Oregon Cultural Trust is vital to preserving the past, sustaining the present, and creating the future. Now, therefore, I, Mayor Sam Adams, City of Roses, do hereby proclaim October 1st through October 8th, 2010, to be Oregon Days of Culture in Portland, and call upon all Portlanders to participate in Oregon culture, to celebrate its vibrancy and depth, and to help ensure the future vitality of arts, heritage, and humanities organizations. Congratulations.
Thank you. Do I say a few words now?
Well, yes. I was told that we had to be ready to describe
a cultural confession,
something that made an early mark on you. So I think we'll start with you.
Okay, Kimberly, welcome.
Thank you.
I read this at LiveWire on Friday, and it fell really flat. So maybe it was my presentation. Let me try this again.
You should be standing up and dancing.
Yeah. I need a little timbal. Fish, blind as a bat. Only paintings he can see are in the abstract. I thought it was good. I mean, I got some props at home. I realize it just doesn't translate very well. But
we allowed to clap for that one.
Oh, okay.
Throw the guy a bone. Thank you.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Brief.
It actually was a haiku, but you knew that.
Yes, of course. What a wonderful haiku. Commissioner Leonard, your haiku?
I don't have a haiku. The only thing I could think of is I have sang Mustang Sally in the park blocks with a band.
Very nice.
Oh, can you do a little now?
I sure could.
Well, why don't you just...
I think people need to drink a little bit before I sing.
Okay.
That's always been the key to my success.
So it's a combination of singing and drinking.
Yes. Okay.
And I've heard Commissioner Fritz sing, and she's got a really great voice.
That was when we did the impromptu national anthem when the tape didn't work. Yeah. And we did it. Actually, we've done it twice. My cultural confession is that when I first came to the United States, I did not enjoy pumpkin pie, having raised three native-born Oregonians, native-born Portlanders, I became an artist in carving the pumpkin at Halloween and discovered how delicious the pumpkin pie recipe in the Betty Crocker cookbook is. And so now every year I make, even though my kids are now grown, I diligently carve the pumpkin and make pumpkin pie for Thanksgiving out of the Halloween pumpkin.
That's great.
Well, my first run-in with culture was a traumatic one.
Cool.
Yeah. I had been assigned to go to a home babysitter at some age. I don't remember exactly what the age is. And she had a well-stocked babysitter room and, you know, gave us pens and we were able to write on the, what I later learned was paper. And we would write on the paper. And it was on the wall, and I thought this was really great. I'd never done it before. So did that a lot and took one home because I didn't know that you couldn't take the pens home. And then I was so excited by being able to draw, I drew on my wall mm-hmm. in my bedroom. And I learned that was wrong. Really wrong. And three coats of paint later, we got it cleaned up. So that's my first brush with culture, but I didn't let it deter me.
That sounds great. Well, I just want to welcome everyone that's in this room to have as much fun confessing your early cultural experiences or recent ones.
Right.
My own is, as I travel around the state, as a trust manager for the Oregon Cultural Trust, I like to listen to books on tape. Thanks to the Multnomah County Library's Library to Go. And the most recent book that I've been listening to, and this is truly a confession, is New Moon, the second book in the Twilight series.
That is a big confession.
That is.
Wow.
I'd like to read...
This is not high art.
This is publicly broadcast, by the way.
I do recognize that. And so I want to say for my English teachers who might be listening from California, I do still read good literature. But when I'm listening, I kind of like to zone out.
What's your favorite character in that?
Oh, you mean am I a Jacob or an Edward supporter? I think I'm for Jacob. I'm with the underdog or the underwolf, if you will. So I wanted to welcome everyone because I feel like the Cultural Trust is more than the $21 million that we've raised in the last 8 years. It's more than the 1,300 cultural nonprofits, the 5 cultural partners, the 45 county and tribal coalitions, and the 57 development grantees this year. The Cultural Trust is all Oregonians doing our part to ensure that culture remains a vibrant component in our state. It is preserving and celebrating our past. It is celebrating our creativity, our innovation, our imagining of the future. And it is exploring with curiosity and civic-mindedness our present. culture is truly a part of our daily lives, as witnessed by our city council members and our mayor, who have all made cultural confessions. And it goes beyond, you know, the arts. It goes beyond carving pumpkins. It goes into visiting historic cemeteries and going to our museums. Checking a book out of a library is a very simple cultural act that we often do pretty much weekly, monthly for some of us. Buying a book at Powell's is also a cultural experience. And so on behalf of the Oregon Cultural Trust, I ask you all on October 1st through October 8th, 8-day week, just like the Beatles sang, we're going to celebrate, we're going to participate, and we're going to give. Because you know what? Oregon is a pretty amazing state. We're innovative, we're creative, we're curious. We all came here at some point, whether it was 100 years ago or 2 minutes ago, because of the incredible vibrancy that makes this state unique. So make your cultural confession at OregonDaysOfCultural.org, and while you're there, read the blog post from people around our state and find an event that's happening, over 500 events across the state, and celebrate, participate, and give. Thank you.
Great job. Thank you very much for all your work, and here's your...
So, Mayor, So, Mayor, may I put a plug in for Work for Art,
please?
And Kimberly, thank you for the presentation. So, the mayor's kicking off at lunch today a presentation on charitable giving at the city and urging city employees to sign up for automatic deductions. And one of the options is called Work for Art, where a sum of money is deducted from our paychecks and it, at the end of the year, adds up. So there's a way that you can double your impact, and it has to do with the Oregon Cultural Trust, and that is that if someone who works for the city signs up for Work for Art, and let's say they give $100 over the course of the year, if they then go to the Oregon Cultural Trust website and make a $100 donation to the Cultural Trust, on their tax return next year, and this is where it gets complicated, they'll get to write off both contributions, but the $100 that they gave to the trust comes back as a $100 tax credit. So that contribution costs you nothing. Doesn't cost you a penny, because you get it right back. The $100 that you've contributed to Work for Art is a deduction on your tax return, so it costs you about 75 cents on the dollar. And you contribute to the statewide endowment for the arts. So we urge people to do both. Contribute to your favorite arts organization, nonprofit, and there are 1,200 listed on the website. And then turn around and do a matching contribution to the Oregon Cultural Trust, and you'll get it right back on your tax return. So thank you, Mayor.
Gotcha. Thank you all. All right, we'll move to communications. We have one. Can you please read the title for 1279?
Request of Michael Van Kleck to address council regarding the role the city can play in improving Portland's education.
Is Michael here? Hi. Please come forward. Glad you're here.
And the name is Michael Van Kleek. That's okay. I think I've been here enough. Maybe we can start. Anyways, it's good to see you all again. Last time I was here, I read a poem, so it was nice to have another council meeting starting with a poem. I'm here to talk about education. I'm here to talk about something that should be really dear to you, Commissioner Leonard, which is Marshall High School and Portland Public Schools' latest restructuring effort. I was going to talk about, I'm a small business owner here in Portland. I've participated on the Oregon Quality Education Commission, participated on the Portland Education Cabinet. And I wanted to talk about how the state of education here is really hurting my ability to do business. Wondering if you all know that Lincoln High, which is largely considered the model school, of students that enter college from Lincoln High, 11% graduate. So, but with what happened Monday night with Portland Public Schools, I think there's a more pressing matter. My goal here is to get council to get aggressive, step up, and fight for the children and families of Portland and break down the silos and end the turf wars between Oregon Education Association, Portland Public Schools, all the different organizations in this community. Break down those silos, focus on the children, and end the wars that are claiming our children as victims. Marshall is perhaps the best performing school in this district. I work on the Quality Education Commission. We did a research on performance on math assessments statewide last year. Marshall is an outlier in terms of their level of performance given the demographics of their students. It's a great school. I volunteered at both Marshall and Franklin last year. Teachers and students love their school, love their community at Marshall. At Franklin, they were openly hostile to the community and to volunteers. But Marshall's far away, so it makes an easy target when somebody wants to say they're doing something different. And so the school district has now tried three times to close it. I came from a district, when I was a kid, my high school was closed. My first exposure to politics was 5 years of fighting to keep my high school open. My community has deteriorated without my school, and I see the same potential going to happen at Marshall. It's one of the youngest and best maintained buildings in this district, and so it's hard to explain why the school district would look to close Marshall. And I think now is the time for City Council to get aggressive here and take a lead, keep Marshall open. I've got two recommendations to what council can do. Number one, convene a community effort to create a new school district around Marshall. Marshall would be a great school to be a charter school, but the Portland Public Schools makes starting a public charter school the hardest of any school district in the state. It takes 2 years at minimum for it to happen. I know, I tried to start one last year. I tried to get involved in the charter school process, and there were roadblocks everywhere. So that's one thing that the council can do, is convene people to create a new district around Marshall. And number two is to think really big. Think the Dutch model. Forget everything that's happening with Portland Public. Why don't we start a new centralized high school in downtown Portland, take advantage of the transit connections we have, do like they've done in Amsterdam. Some of the best performing students in the world come out of Amsterdam, where they have a high school with 10,000 students, small schools within the school, just like we see at Marshall. Why don't we do something like that? And council, I invite you to take the lead in this, because no one else is doing it.
Could you send me some links to that last Amsterdam process, high school you just described?
Sure, I'll send you information about the I think it's the Rembrandt High School, right down by in the Rembrandt line.
Great.
Be happy to.
Thank you very much, and thanks for your involvement on all those groups.
Thanks, council.
All right. Anyone wish to pull any item from the consent agenda? I guess I'm pulling 1291 back to my office unless objection. Any others? All right. Carla, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We have three times certain, starting with, would you please read resolution item number 1280.
Accept the master plan for Leech Botanical Garden as a guide for future development and management of the garden.
Thank you, Mary Adams. We have two panels today. The first is Brett Horner and Nancy Granowski. Brett is our Parks Planning and Strategy Manager, and Nancy is the Parks Senior Planner. The second panel will be Gay Greger, and I believe Tim Brooks is here. So thank you both. Leech Botanical is something of a secret garden here in Portland. Located in the woodland hollow carved by Johnson Creek in outer southeast between Beggar's Tick Wildlife Refuge and the Powell Butte Natural Area. There is renewed energy at Leech Botanical Gardens, and to share this secret with East Portland residents and highlight this place as a unique regional asset. We have new members joining the board, new partnerships developing, and new funding that will be available through the Lentz Urban Renewal Area. The garden also has a new executive director, David Porter, who has, I believe, joined us here this morning, but although his official start date is not until next week. Our team at Parks is excited to share the vision for Leech Botanical Gardens with you today. So we'll start by introducing Brett and Nancy, and then we'll have a second panel and then questions. Welcome.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish, Mayor, and other commissioners, and good morning. As Nick mentioned, Leech Botanical Gardens does play a very important role in our city's open space system. It's one of several unique gardens in our system and one of only a few in East Portland. As Commissioner Fish also mentioned, it's an exciting time for the gardens and the plan to come forward, as park staff is very happy with the master plan and that it will start to be implemented almost immediately this year and next with identified funding. And building upon recent acquisitions and progress made over the last several years, The master plan will help the garden leverage investment and expand partnership opportunities in the coming years. I'm going to hand things over to Nancy, who has the presentation and who brought this plan to finalization. After much hard work with our former senior planner, David Yamashita, who started the master plan. Thank you.
Are we going to be referring to this map?
It's going to be in the slideshow.
Thank you. We have a little PowerPoint. Thank you.
Thank you. Excuse me. I'm just going to give you a very brief tour of the master plan, which you have copies of, and you also have copies of the little PowerPoint that I'm going to go through. So we will do that now.
Thank you.
We had a planning process that involved a steering committee that was made up of people from the neighborhood groups, citizens, and staff. There were open houses and some briefings. And then when the draft plan was done, that David brought it to that point, then I took over and did some revisions, and those were then reviewed by the new Leach Friends Board, plus the original steering committee, and we made some modifications, and that's the plan that you have in front of you. As you know, that this is a significant piece of park property, and it's built around the home and garden of Johnna Little Leach. She was a renowned botanist and made some significant findings. The garden itself is a botanical treasure. It's an important piece of the publicly owned green spaces in southeast Portland, and it's an important natural resource habitat. It sits on the banks of Johnson Creek. The location is right in the middle here. Whoops. Oh, darn. Okay, well, we'll go back. All right, so it's in the middle of these things, and it shows you what the other sites are around it, plus the very large Willamette National Cemetery that's at the bottom of the slide. The site itself is, as you can see, quite wooded. It's a 16-acre site. Johnson Creek flows through the bottom southern part of it. So the function of it is a botanical garden that focuses on plants of the Northwest, plus the historic Leach collection. It's an educational resource, and it also functions as a museum that displays and educates visitors about John and Lilla Leach, who were significant members of the Southeast Portland community. This is the proposed master plan, and we're going to kind of walk through a number of these things as we move through the next couple of slides. It's in the back of your document if you want to see the 11 by 17. It's also on the board that's over on the side here. So the proposed site concepts are to develop a new entry to the garden up on the north and upper end of it and develop that area for education and classes and small groups that will come to the garden there. Expanding the trails and the circulation system is very important, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of the new collections that are going to be added to and expanded that are in the garden. So there's the upper garden, which I just mentioned. There's also a Pacific Northwest forest area, and we're going to be making improvements to that area and making it more representative of our normal habitats. Riparian zone is along Johnson Creek, and we have been working with BES on projects upstream and downstream that they're doing now, and they're using that as an education resource as well. There is a nursery, and we'll maintain that in its current location and use that as a place for selling plants, some additional revenue, for a source of scientific background and research, and a demonstration greenhouse. The historic Leach plant collection is around the house itself, and that will be improved by some thinning and restoration, and maintaining the garden's emphasis on the indigenous plants of the Pacific Northwest. Education is very key to the Leach Friends and to the mission of the Leach Garden, so we'll be expanding those areas. By the way, the photos that are in here are not necessarily what's at Leach now. It's what we hope to develop in the future. These are just kind of, this is an idea of what we'd like to see there. And improve the interpretive signage and information that's available to the visitors. As far as the facilities go, we will continue to use the manor house for receptions and restore that heritage, restore it to its former heritage, and develop it as a museum to document the contributions of John and Lilla Leach. There'll be an education facility in the garden area.
By the way, we should note that lots of people get married at that site. There's receptions both indoors and outdoors, and it's a lovely location to do an event if someone's watching. You charge a small fee, of course, but it's still a bargain.
And the administration building will be improved and updated so it can function much better as office space and classrooms. There are a couple of small buildings, the Stone Cabin and the Stone Residence, which will be used for education programs as well. The Carriage House, which is around the area where there's currently a lot of weddings, will be renovated for more storage, and we'll build some additional outdoor shelters to be used for education. Access and parking are really important. There's a very small parking lot right now, and we look to making that one of the first improvements is to improve the parking on the upper area and have a whole new entryway up there that's much more, it's easier to get to and makes it easier to access the gardens and safer. And then to get the circulation system throughout the garden improved, it's a little hazardous right now. It's kind of steep. We look at improving those trails and making them more accessible to people, both from an ADA standpoint and just from a general standpoint, and to develop a new pedestrian connection bridge over Johnson Creek that would connect north and south sides. And we look to a little bit more acquisition in the northeast corner of the property and could do expand the collection there and provide for a caretaker's residence in the future. And there's the plan again. We've just had a brief tour. Implementation has already begun with an expanded and re-energized board. We have a phased development plan, which is in your document as well, and we'll be developing a business plan to implement these improvements. Thank you.
Thank you for an outstanding presentation. We'll see if there's any council questions, and if not, we'll go to the next panel.
So how would you sell someone on visiting Leech Garden as opposed to any other garden? And we have so many in Portland. I'm curious, because people ask me, I'm curious what your answer is. How is it different than the other gardens?
I would say it's unique in that it really emphasizes the Pacific Northwest portion of it as the botanic features that you can, you know, do in your own home garden. It shows you how you can take our natural habitat and, you know, without bringing in lots of exotic things, do something that's quite lovely and very appropriate and friendly for the wildlife. It's also pretty significant in that Little Leech was a very important botanic explorer in our part of the country. Found Calmeopsis leechiana in the Siskiyou.
I beg your pardon.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend.
Can you say that again?
Calmeopsis leechiana. And it's a lovely little plant that they thought was an azalea at one point, but isn't really. It's its own little species. So she was quite astute at finding these things.
You know, Mayor, there's a surprising number of homes and cottages and buildings within the park system that just, as the system has grown, we've acquired them. And this particular home is just a gem. And it overlooks, the body of water, and it's very quiet. And when, you know, I tell people that if you're going to go out to the Lentz area and make a day, and you're going to be out there, this really should be on your list mm-hmm. to spend an hour or so. And it's very calm. It's out of the way, and it's unique.
Any other discussion? Thank you.
Thank you both. Mayor, we have one more panel. Gay Greger, who has worked tirelessly over the past year as board chair, and Tim Brooks, who is a member of the Master Plan Committee and is a board member of the Leech Botanical Garden. Welcome both. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you. Mayor and council members, I want to thank you for the opportunity to comment on the Leech Botanical Garden Master Plan. And first of all, I want to take this opportunity to thank Portland Parks and Recreation for being willing to take this one on, for supporting the development of a new master plan for Leech Garden. And I'd like to recognize all the members of the advisory committee. Tim and several others are here today. They worked tirelessly with David Yamashita over the better part of 3 years to develop and refine this plan. And then finally, I'd like to thank again Nancy Granowski, because when David Yamashita got a wild hair and moved to Hawaii, Nancy was the one who stepped forward and shepherded the plan through review and production.
Gay, if there are other committee members here, could they just raise their hands so we can acknowledge them? Thank you. Thank you for joining us today.
It took a dedicated team of people to get this job done, and the current board and staff at Leech are very, very appreciative of their efforts. As Nancy explained, the plan defines the garden's primary focus as threefold. First, a botanic garden that features Northwest native plants. And to my knowledge, there isn't another botanic garden in the state that's focused on the state's native plants. An educational resource for children and adults alike, and a place that keeps that amazing story of John and Lilla Leach alive. Continuing to refine that focus, I think, is a very, very important thing to do as we move forward. We'll be continuing to hone in on that to get to be able to explain in answer to the mayor's question much more succinctly, why is this a really, really special and important place? What is it that we do better than anybody else here at Leach Garden? The first phase of the master plan is already made possible with the funding from the Lentz Urban Renewal Area, and we're very, very excited to get started on that, working with PDC and Parks. And completion of that first phase, I think, is a really critical element in the long-term business plan for the garden, because it will expand our opportunities for revenue generation and also serve as a springboard for development of a capital campaign that will make a phase two and phase three, et cetera, possible. It also provides an important opportunity to engage with our partners and our immediate neighbors and with the broader community in the evolution of the garden. Development of strategic partnerships was a key recommendation in the plan, and they're already playing an important role at Leach Garden. For example, our new partnership with Portland Audubon has made Audubon's programs more accessible to the residents of East Portland, and it's introduced Leach Garden to scores of new visitors. This is a very ambitious plan. It's not going to happen. Completion of it isn't going to happen anytime soon, but we're very, very delighted to have the guidance of our new executive director, David Porter, as we move forward. And David is here today, and I'd like you to stand, say hello.
Welcome, David.
Hi, David.
And by the way, is Janie Iverson here?
Janie's not.
Janie, she's the interim.
So. She's the interim director, correct. Oh. And she's been great to work with in these past few months. Earlier this month, Leach Garden Friends Board and Portland Parks and Recreation completed an operating agreement, and we're looking forward to working in collaboration with Parks as we face the important challenges that are ahead. And as we move forward, we want to thank you as well, Council, for your continued support, and I want to invite all of you out to walk with us in the garden whenever it's convenient for you. It's good for the soul.
Thank you. Thanks. Thank you very much. Tim, welcome.
Thank you. Tim Brooks, Mayor Adams, Commissioners. I do want to clarify one point, Commissioner Fish, and that is I am not on the board of Leach Garden Friends. However, if Gay has her way, I will be soon. She has been working me very, very hard over the past few months.
It was a subliminal message. We're ahead of ourselves.
I asked him to do that.
You did. Well, on behalf of the 11-member steering committee, I want to thank you for this opportunity. I'm glad to see that some of the folks made it. Linda Robinson, I know, is here, and others. This committee was made up of neighborhood representatives, watershed council members, friends group reps, as well as garden volunteers. And that's really where I got my start. In 1985, I worked with Bonnie Brunko, who was the curator at the time, on documenting all the entire plant collection of Leach Botanical Garden. And it was really the native aspect that's been referred to, that Gay and others referred to, that got me started and interested in plants. It actually helped. I went on into landscape architecture following that experience. And it's also what has kept me hooked all these 25 years on the garden. I served on the education committee there for 10 years. More recently, of course, working on the master plan. But it's this native piece that really has hooked me, and that's what my life has been about ever since. I understand I don't have a lot of time, so let me just zero in a few of the many topics that the committee covered. And the first of it is on page 8 of your document is the little gateway into the garden, Sleepy Hollow. And I think one of the, as Commissioner Fish mentioned, one of the most appealing aspects of the garden is its hidden quality. And at the same time, it's both a blessing and a curse. And one of the things that the committee spent a lot of time on was how do we attract more people to the garden? Even today, I'll meet people that have never heard of this garden or that there's even a botanical garden in Portland. So it's always eye-opening for me as well that we really don't have we haven't gotten the message out about the garden. And so one of the things that there are a number of things that the committee talked about in terms of how we might go about attracting people. And, of course, beginning with better signage on streets, at the entryways, within the garden, but also expanding to really try and draw in the local community, creating some of the neighborhood park elements, for example, maybe a picnic shelter, things that would attract our core constituency, say, within 5 miles of the garden. And then other aspects like a potential community garden were discussed, and some bigger attractions like there was a zip line contemplated. I think we nixed that eventually.
That was Tim's idea.
Well, and then the cedar canopy walk, which I was pleased to see made it into this final version. Something that just kind of came to mind as we're walking through this very lush cedar grove, which kind of reaches down into the riparian corridor, crosses wetlands, and then you're right on the banks of Johnson Creek. Well, you could just build this walkway out, kind of leading out from the cedars through, you're kind of going from the floor to the ceiling of the forest without actually taking a step, just walking out on this horizontal boardwalk with places for groups to meet, you know, educational events, whatever. And then you end up at the banks of the Johnson Creek, looking up and down the riparian corridor. Just a fascinating potential experience there and something you wouldn't find anywhere nearby. So there are a number of other aspects, a suspension bridge across the creek that would avoid the need to go out on the bridge. There's currently a bridge that gets taken out during the winter due to floodwaters, but something that would actually hang there above any possible flood elevation.
Is this bridge managed by the county or the city? I'm sorry, just bad joke.
I don't know how much
Get me started. I
didn't. He's wisely ignoring you, Commissioner Fish.
All great ideas, Tim. And one of our challenges after we adopt this plan is to build some momentum to a bond measure, where we'll have some dollars to invest in addition to the capital dollars that have been set aside within the Urban Renewal District, the additional dollars to build out this vision. And we share your excitement about the possibilities.
Yeah. Okay. I wanted to echo Gay's comment about the Audubon partnership and how important that is to also, again, attracting more people to the garden. This garden is not only it's a wildlife sanctuary, but it's much more than that. It's really a major hub in a network of habitat patches and corridors. And this map that was shown only reflects a very small piece of what's out there. Just off the map is your 600-acre Powell Butte Nature Park. And then you've got new acquisitions, Clatsop Butte. You've got wildlife habitat areas throughout here, and this is really a key component of that. So I think bringing in Audubon serves multiple purposes, drawing more visitors as well as really the educational and the wildlife piece. And then funding and operations, of course, is a very key part of that. We can't rely simply on grants and rentals. We've got to look for a stable funding source, and this is really key beginning piece of that, and it's much appreciated.
Thank you very much. Thank you both.
I have a couple of questions and actually a comment based on your last, because sometimes when we adopt plans, people watching think that we've committed to funding everything in it, and that is by no means the case, as Commissioner Fish just alluded to. So I want to thank you both for all your service here, and Tim, you provide your professional expertise often in a volunteer capacity, and I greatly appreciate that both, and I hope you do consider being on the board to add some more pressure to that. And thank you for serving with your neighborhood association as well. And Gay, you have served on as an employee of Portland Parks and Recreation for a long time, and now you're serving in a volunteer capacity, and it's just evidence that our city employees are deeply committed to the jobs that we do to serving the public, and so that after you don't have to do it and you're not getting paid to do it, you're still taking a leadership role, and I just wanted to acknowledge that and thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you
very much. Carla, did anyone sign up to testify?
Yes, we have two people signed up.
Thank you.
Merrill Reddish and Linda Robinson.
Well, welcome back to the City Council Chambers. We're glad you're here. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Good morning.
Morning,
Carol. And since when Tim alluded to it, hopefully you'll fill in the punchline of the new partnership there with Audubon.
I'll do my best. Should I go first? Okay. My name is Merrill Reddish. I'm the executive director for the Audubon Society of Portland, and I'm here speaking and representing Audubon, who is very, very supportive of this master plan. And we have a particular stake in the success of this plan and the success of Leech Botanical Gardens, and that is because beginning July 1st of this year, Portland Audubon entered into a partnership with Leech Botanical Gardens and Portland Parks. We established our east side location at the gardens, and we have it staffed about 4 days a week. And already we have hosted free family programs and conducted urban nature walks for some of Portland's newest residents, youth from Bhutan and Nepal. Portland Audubon has a lot of goals and a vision for being on the east side. And those goals include extending our reach, expanding our programs to new and diverse audiences. And we want to also add value to the good work that's already happening in East Portland, including what's happening at Leech Botanical Gardens. We want to support the vision of East Portland residents for a healthy environment and access to parks and natural areas and trails. And finally, we want to draw attention to Leech Botanical Gardens and promote it as a natural and cultural asset and one that is worthy of investment. And Portland Audubon is already investing. We intend to invest about $200,000 over the next 2 years to build a diverse program, build a volunteer base, cultivate leaders from the community. So we're really we're serious about this, and we trust that City Council is serious about it as well. So with that, just to let you know again that we wholeheartedly and enthusiastically support this master plan and hope that you will do the same.
Thank you very much.
I have a question just before Linda starts. The partnership with the youth from Bhutan and Nepal, did you have any community organizations or the Office of Human Relations helping with that?
What we did was something that we found successful in the past, and we partnered with OPAL, Organizing People, Activating Leaders. So they're an environmental justice organization there, and so we partnered with them, and they recruited and helped organize kids. And what we did was have our educators, our conservation and our environmental educators, lead the trip along the Springwater Corridor.
Terrific. Thank you.
And Linda Robinson. Linda is a really highly valued member of our Parks Board. She has been the kind of neighborhood leader on Gateway Green and that vision, which the mayor and I and this council feel very strongly about. And Linda, you are a treasure to our system. So thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. I couldn't resist coming and celebrating, not just coming for the problem things, but I came to celebrate this. I'm really excited about what's happening at Leech Garden and how this master plan will open it up for more partnerships, make it available and known in East Portland. I mean, I was so excited when Merrill came to the East Portland Parks Coalition a year or two or more ago and asked us, do you think people would like having us out here? And it's like, yeah. So, and I'm really also excited about the new entrance to the park. For those who come by bicycle or bus, that street going down to the entrance is taking your life in your hands. You know, you get to the top of the hill, you start down, and you're suddenly on a windy country road with no ditch. I mean, it's just drop off and a wall on the side. So making that accessible from the top and being able to easily get down to the other parts of the garden, so the new path that connects will be really important. So I'm really excited about that as well. And we also have to thank, you know, the Metro and the bond measure for making it possible to acquire those upper portions and double the size of the garden and make all of this possible. So it was because of the acquisition that the local share of the Metro bond measure were able to do that.
I guess we could also say, and I'd say this facetiously, but with the decline and collapse of the real estate values in our community, the only silver lining for the hardship that has caused is it has reduced the cost of acquiring some of the land, and some of the planned development that's not going forward makes it easier for us to acquire that land. So it's a great point.
So I just wanted to say I support it wholeheartedly. I participated in it. I look forward to using it, and I'm glad that this is coming to council today.
Thank you both very much. So, Mayor, we have a plan that I would move for adoption.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Carla, would you please call the vote?
Leonard?
I am very pleased to support this. I've been to Leech Botanical Gardens a number of times. It's almost within walking distance of where I live, so I do highly treasure this and appreciate all the work that's gone into it. Aye.
Fritz.
Oh, thank you, Commissioner Fish, for your leadership on this, and Parks Director Zari Santner, and indeed all the Parks folks who've worked so hard on this. Thanks to the Audubon Society for the new partnership. That's very exciting. And indeed to the taxpayers of the Metro region who have, as Linda just noted, funded the purchase of additional land. And it's good to see and note that some of that land is being bought within the city of Portland, within the urban growth boundary, and being preserved forever. So it's exciting to see this botanical garden, which focuses on native Oregon plants. And it's a good morning to be adopting this plan with our note for the culture of Oregon, and very much those are part of our cultural resources at Leech Botanical Garden. So thank you all for your good work. Aye.
Fish.
So I very much appreciate the comment that a number of you made about the need to elevate Leech's profile, because in truth, we should be mentioning Leech in the same breath that we mention the Japanese garden, the Lansu Chinese Garden, and Hoyt Arboretum. They are all world-class. And the only difference is geography and access. But they are all world-class. And I, Zari Santner, as you know, Gay, there's a special place in her heart for Leech. And from the beginning of my service as commissioner in charge, she's had a particular desire to make sure that we keep a good thing going and provide the resources necessary. So I want to acknowledge Zari's leadership. I want to start by thanking our planners. Planners have tough jobs in city government, because if they do their work really well, they usually don't get much credit. But if something goes wrong, they're usually in the front lines of taking the blame. And at Parks, because of the scope and size of our portfolio, planners are just vital. And with Brett and Nancy and David, who did leave us for greener pastures in Hawaii, we have three of the best. So thank you for your work. And it reminds me that, Amanda, I think this is either the fifth or the sixth master plan perhaps the fifth under my service, that has come to this council that involve bold and exciting projects on the east side, and the bulk of them east of 82nd Street. Three new parks in Outer East that we have acquired, and now we're waiting to develop the master plans. This vision, a vision for Cully, and a vision in the works for a updated Lens Park. And what has struck me about all of these is that they have been neighborhood-based planning exercises, bringing people together. They've all had a few bumps in the road, because that's the nature of trying to get to consensus. But at the time it comes to council, we've had beautiful visions with strong community support. And that's a testament to the way you go about this process. So I want to really thank my team for their hard work. I want to thank Gay for her indefatigable leadership. This is not easy, and there's been a lot going on here beyond the master plan. And so thank you. Tim, thank you for taking time to come and share your passion. Linda, as always, you're always in the mix on good things that are happening in that area, and thanks for being such a good partner. To the new executive director, we welcome you, and we want to support you. There are 107 friends groups that help us manage this jewel of our system. 107 groups just like this that are made up of citizens and mostly volunteers who help manage this great system. We could not do it without groups like this. And so to the board and the volunteers, thank you very much. And I look forward to the day when Leech is less a well-kept secret and more an essential destination for everyone who goes on the other side of the river to see the best that we have to offer. So thank you all. Bye.
Adams.
I love Leech. I've been to a wedding there and numerous staff retreats there, so I've had an opportunity to climb around and use the facilities. So based on that, what you're proposing very much rings to be very smart and true. I would just add one other thing to raise the visibility, and that is to figure out how the gardens around the city, some are in the park system, some are managed by nonprofits, can sort of better co-market each other so that, the Chinese classical garden is marketing the Leech Botanical Garden. You rotate that around some way so that everybody benefits. We've just got so many fantastic gardens. I just love to show them off. Aye. Thank you, Mayor. Oh, and thanks to your leadership, Commissioner Fish, for getting it done. All right, that gets us to 1281, which is a two-minute report by Auditor Griffin. 20-minute report. That's why we have an auditor. Check those numbers.
I read the item. Sorry. Transmit results of recent audit work by the Audit Services Division, Office of the City Auditor.
Good morning. LaVon Griffin-Vallade, City Auditor. And I was not asked in advance to do this, but I thought since I'm the sixth elected in the city that I would offer my culture confession today.
Oh, yeah,
as
what
well.
Is it? What is it?
It does not compare with Mustang Sally, sorry. But in eighth grade, I sang a solo for my graduation, You'll Never Walk Alone. You'll Never Walk Alone.
Oh, what is that?
Oh, it's from a musical.
You'll Never Walk Home.
You'll Never Walk Alone.
Jerry and the Pacemaker?
Yes.
Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Yeah. It's the Beatles,
and
Hammerstein?
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
No, sorry, Rodgers.
Popularized by Jerry.
The Beatles.
Well, it was after being traumatized in first grade because my teacher would not allow me to sing in the trio singing Red River Valley because I was too loud.
Oh, nice.
You?
I know.
Too
it's hard
loud.
To believe. So I'm here this morning to introduce a brief presentation on five recently released audits. Portland has a rich tradition of performance auditing, which is where independent auditors evaluate how well programs are meeting their goals and whether public dollars are being spent efficiently. That tradition was established in the city 27 years ago by former city auditor Jewel Lansing, who is known nationally as the godmother of performance auditing. And this long tradition has allowed us to establish positive, cooperative interactions with bureaus. City staff willingly open their doors and files to our reviews. The Audit Services Division is one of eight divisions or functions in the City Auditor's Office and is recognized as a model of best practice in performance auditing in local government, both locally and throughout the country. The work that Drummond Kahn, Director of Audit Services, and the various team members will present today include audits of the Police Bureau, Fire Bureau, Emergency Management, local stimulus efforts, and a follow-up to a 2008 audit of construction contracting. In addition to these five reports, we have eight audits currently underway and will be issuing three other reports in the very near future, including our audit of the implementation of the city's SAP system. As some of you have remarked, our current audit schedule is pretty ambitious. We agree, and we look forward to being back in front of you again soon to continue the discussion of audits and our recommendations regarding improving the delivery and management of city services. Finally, the folks who do this work are well-trained and experienced professionals who take their role as independent, objective performance auditors very seriously. This organization and the public we serve are fortunate to have this team of auditors on board. So I'll now turn it over to Drummond Kahn, who is, again, the Director of Audit Services in my office, and he will introduce the staff and the reports. Thank you very much. Next time, I will sing a verse of You'll Never Walk Alone, and then you'll forevermore recognize
Don't make us wait.
Yeah. We only have 2 minutes, remember?
I'll extend the time.
Well, good morning. It's a pleasure to speak with you today about the current work of the Audit Services Division in the Office of the City Auditor. I'm mostly here for the haiku, but my name is Drummond Kahn. I'm the Director of Audit Services. As LaVon mentioned, our work is recognized locally and nationally as adding value to city processes, to improve public accountability, and to inform decision makers. I mentioned that we do follow national auditing standards, which are common to government audit offices across the U.S. It means those other offices can rely on our work, whether they are from the state of Oregon, from the federal government, or other jurisdictions. We have a highly professional staff, some of whom you'll meet today. Each professional in our office holds a graduate degree, a professional certification in auditing, or both, and our office was recognized for producing top reports by both the Association of Government Accountants and the Association of Local Government Auditors. Beyond the professionals who worked on today's audits, several other auditors on our staff had roles on these projects, and you'll meet them as they discuss other audits in the future. I also want to thank Robert Cowan, who is our public information specialist and directs our publication and communication as we release audit reports. We'll discuss five audits today. The first was released in May, and the most recent was just issued today. These topics, as LaVon mentioned, represent a range of issues facing government, from police and fire to economic stimulus, emergency management, and facilities. And we plan an aggressive schedule of additional topics, as LaVon discussed. We also conduct follow-up work to make sure that our audit recommendations were implemented and to publish those results to council and to the public. I should add that over the past 3 years, city managers have implemented over 90% of the audit recommendations we've made, which really reflects and illustrates the positive effects that auditing can have. It means that management not only agrees with our recommendations, but we've framed them in ways that they're able to take the steps to implement them. Today's first audit is on the controls and oversight of the narcotics that the Portland Police Bureau uses to train police dogs, and just represents one facet of the sorts of internal control work that we do to make sure that processes are effective in meeting the goals of the city. And to present those, I wanted to introduce to you Christine Adams-Wanberg and Bob McKay. Christine has worked in our office for more than 7 years and brings experience from our city's budget office, from the Oregon State Budget Office, and from the Governor's Office for the State of Idaho. She holds a master's degree in public administration and is both a certified internal auditor and a certified government auditing professional. She also serves on the Professional Issues Committee of the National Association of Local Government Auditors. And Bob McKay has worked in the auditor's office for 10 years, including service in both the Audit Services Division and the Portland Multnomah Progress Board. He brings experience from both the Oregon Health Division's Center for Health Statistics and experience working in Washington, D.C. for a U.S. senator. He holds a master's degree in public administration.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Christine Adams-Wanberg. I'm a senior management auditor in the Audit Services Division, and I'm going to give you a summary of the audit that we performed on the drugs that the Police Bureau uses for training purposes for its drug detection dogs. I do want to note up front that this particular audit was not the result of any specific concern that the city auditor's office had, but was actually upon the request of the police bureau. They were developing some new procedures and wanted to basically have us review those procedures to see how we could strengthen their efforts. This audit focused on the controls over the physical security, the inventory, and the access to the controlled substances that the Drugs and Vice Division uses for this. We reviewed the current and proposed standard operating procedures for those inventory checks, the drug repackaging, as well as damaged and missing